The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Turns out Team Hillary really did surveil the Trump campaign.
The National Security Advisor for President Joe Biden just happens to be someone who came up with this whole narrative about Russia.
Trump tried to warn us.
They spied on my campaign.
Well, there's no real evidence of that.
Of course there is.
No.
It's all over the place.
The masks were off for celebrities at the Super Bowl.
I mean, you could just smell the distaste that the insiders have for the outsiders.
And we'll examine the U.S. response to Russia's continuing threat to Ukraine.
I think we've done almost nothing to convince Putin that he will face very serious costs if he proceeds.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program, please, as well, at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with the latest revelations from Special Counsel John Durham. Durham's latest legal filing alleges Michael Sussman, a lawyer who represented the Clinton campaign, worked with another man to access Trump communications before and even after President Trump became President of the United States. They mined data from Trump Tower, a Trump apartment, and even the White House Executive Office of the President. It appears to be part of the failed effort to tie Donald Trump to Russia. But many questions remain, including what data did they obtain from the so-called secure White House servers and who had access to that data? I discussed the latest with Town Hall's Katie Pavlik.
What do you think is going on?
Well, I think that, you know, John Durham, to many people's, frustration, has been taking a very long time to get through this special counsel investigation. And I think we should remember that thanks to Attorney General Bill Barr, he is a special counsel, making it more difficult for the Biden administration to get rid of him once they came into office. And so in terms of what he's doing now, I think he's just being very methodical about going through the FBI's investigation of the Trump campaign, looking into very detailed specifics about, servers and who was doing what, and really honing in on what the Clinton campaign was doing. Because for so long, as you know, through Robert Mueller's special counsel investigation, throughout the Trump administration, the Clinton campaign really didn't get much scrutiny. There wasn't a lot about the Clinton campaign in the special counsel investigation from Robert Mueller. John Durham's entire job is to take a look at the whole picture when it came to 2016. And I think he's finding that a lot of what was said about President Trump and the details of what the lawyers were doing and the attorneys was pretty sketchy, to say the least, and in a lot of ways may have broken the law, because, of course, it's his job to look at the criminality of all of this. So we now know that the executive office of the president was being monitored or looked at. We know that Trump Tower and President Trump's other residence was being closely monitored by the Clinton campaign. And, of course, this narrative about the Russia collusion came from the very same people. Now, how is this relevant to the current times and Joe Biden? Well, the National Security Advisor for President Joe Biden just happens to be someone who came up with this whole narrative about Russia. And, of course, when he's dealing with issues like Russia and Ukraine, you have to ask questions about, you know, what we can trust when he is speaking.
When you use a lawyer, I don't expect people to remember John Dean. Joseph Alsup or Stuart Alsup, one of the two, called him a bottom-dwelling slug. He was the White House counsel, and he was the desk officer for the cover-up, self-described, of Watergate. And when Dean flipped, it all fell down. All right, so Dean said, this guy's guilty, that guy's guilty, that gal's involved. This guy, yeah, he did it all. He was the roadmap. And Sussman is John Dean. But Sussman seems to me to be acting like G. Gordon Liddy, who, love him or hate him, never said a word. What do you think Sussman's going to be?
Well, given who he's working for, the Clintons, I would assume that he wants to act like Liddy rather than speaking, right? So, you know, the wheels of justice turn slowly, especially in these situations where there's a lot of research to do on what happened. Especially, and it makes it much harder if people are ignoring subpoenas or not giving information to investigators or lying to investigators, which is the accusation in some of these cases in the Durham probe. But my bet would be that he doesn't say much, that they fight back. The Clinton campaign is already saying that they're going to fight back against these allegations, dragging this thing out even further. And, you know, I doubt there will be much accountability, Hugh, given the way that things happen in Washington.
I mean, don't get your hopes up. That's what I do tell people.
Exactly. And he doesn't mean they shouldn't look at it and continue.
And hope.
And again, Bill Barr deserves credit for making Durham a special counsel rather than just, you know, an investigator so that he has more protection. But in terms of indictments for people like Hillary Clinton, we'll have to wait and see. But
it's going to take a long time to get anywhere productive. I just want people to be patient.
Well, this is a rather important story, considering the implications that has all but been completely ignored by legacy media. Here's Salem host Mike Gallagher.
Did you hear the news over the weekend? You were watching ABC, NBC, CBS. You didn't hear it. If you didn't pick up the Washington Post or the New York Times or look online and see anything from the Beast, you wouldn't have known what the Durham investigation uncovered. In an ordinary time, this would be one of the biggest stories of the year. The Clinton campaign paid a technology company to infiltrate servers belonging to Trump Tower and later the White House itself, so they could establish an inference and narrative to bring to government agencies linking Donald Trump to Russia. That, according to an investigation from special counsel John Durham. Let's take a stroll down memory lane. Let's go back to President Trump sitting down with Leslie Stahl, because unlike the current administration and many administrations prior to Trump, he would talk to anybody. People can't figure out why he gives interviews to Maggie Haberman of the New York Times or Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes, because he'll talk to anyone. He's not holding back. He never did. He never will. Here's what he said to Leslie Stahl back in October of 2020.
So the biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign.
There's no real evidence of that.
Of course there is.
No.
It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? You know, this is 60 Minutes, and we can't put on things we can't verify.
You won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
We can't put on things we can't verify.
Leslie, they spied on my campaign.
Well, we can't verify
that. It's been totally verified.
No.
It's been, just go down and get the papers. They spied on my campaign. They got caught.
No.
And then they went much further than that, and they got caught. And you will see that, Leslie, and you know that, but you just don't want to put it on the air.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't know that.
Now, I want to remind you that Leslie Stahl considers herself an objective journalist. She considers herself to be not an opinion person. Make no mistake, there is a difference between what Tucker Carlson does or Laura Ingraham does and what Leslie Stahl does. She even brags about how important and lofty 60 Minutes is. This is 60 Minutes. How dare you say something like that? Which turned out to be true, according to the Durham report. Durham filed a motion on February 11th, focused on potential conflicts of interest related to the representation of former Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman. He has been charged with making a false statement to a federal agent. Durham's filing reveals that Sussman had assembled and conveyed the allegations to the FBI on behalf of at least two specific clients, including a technology executive at a U.S.-based internet company and the Clinton campaign. The filing revealed that the Clinton campaign paid a technology company to spy on Trump, first at Trump Tower and then in the White House. Hey, CBS, where are you? Hey, CNN, you covering this? No, of course they're not. Because they're corrupt. They're corrupt to the core. If the shoe was on the other foot, we would be treated to this story morning, noon, and night. I'm grateful for Congressman Jim Jordan.
Now we know 100% John Durham's revelation, John Durham's filing here. Yep, there was spying going on, and it was worse than we thought because they were spying on the sitting president of the United States, and it goes right to the Clinton campaign. So God bless John Durham and his investigation. It's taken a long time, but we're getting to now what we all suspected. The only thing we didn't understand was it was worse than we thought.
Than we thought. What was that about Trump again? He's a liar. He's a maniac. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You want to hear a little montage that Derek, my producer, put together? That's not hard to find. I give you Adam Schiff. I give you Valerie Plame, the former CIA officer. And I give you the former director of national intelligence, James Clapper. Let's take a stroll again down another memory lane.
That it was all essentially a deep state conspiracy. There was spying on the Trump campaign. All of that was debunked by the inspector general.
But I think Attorney General Barr's rather casual assessment that the FBI spied on candidate Trump is a little too loose with the facts.
Well, I think he's deliberately spinning the narrative that whereby he's a victim of the deep state spying on him or spying on the campaign, which is not the case.
It's not the case? Well, what are you going to say today, Clapper? What are you going to say today, Leslie Stahl? What are you going to say now? My gosh. This is the beast. This is what we're up against. And I'm glad that we can identify it when it happens. I hope it'll motivate you to vote so we can get every one of these bums out of office. It's our only hope. They're guilty of everything they accuse us of being. All we heard for years was Trump's collusion with Russia. And this misinformation was peddled by Adam Schiff, the mainstream media, the Leslie Stahls of the world. They were desperately trying to prove that somehow Trump worked with the Russians. It was false. It's been completely debunked. And now there's evidence that states that the Democrats and the FBI and the Clinton campaign spied on Trump in the White House. And my gosh, for the mainstream media to virtually ignore this, it tells you everything you need to know about today's mainstream media. They're evil. They're corrupt. They are a bunch of activists for the Democrat Party. We're supposed to trust them when they say we know how to run a free and fair election?
Coming up.
I think we've done almost nothing to convince Putin that he will face very serious costs if he proceeds.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The last Super Bowl concluded an enormously entertaining playoff season filled with last-minute heroics. The ratings for the big game itself were tremendous, but the massive audience didn't just see a game. The network likes to show celebrities at the event, and this year the game took place in L.A., celebrity capital of the world, where the mask mandates, by the way, remain very much in effect. However, virtually none of the celebrities were seen wearing masks. The very same people who have often lectured us about following the mask rules were conducting themselves in a very, quote, unscientific, close quote, fashion. It was a dramatic demonstration of high-profile hypocrisy. It did not go unnoticed by the hoi polloi. I spoke with columnist Selena Zito. This week, it finally became acceptable among the insider set to say that the pandemic is over. But this abrupt change is part of an apparently coordinated effort to save a political tribe. As such, it does not pass the smell test for most Americans. It is now too late to save the insiders. What do you mean, Selena?
Well, I have long said on this show that what is going on in this country right now, and we are in a very inside-outside moment. It's not really left-right. And a lot of that has been driven by the people in power and the people in culture. I often call them our cultural curators. These are the people that have power in government and institutions, academia, corporations, entertainment, and large media. They are the insiders. And the rest of the country are the outsiders. And because of the way they have handled their position of power, in particular over this pandemic, has pushed a lot of people who normally wouldn't be center-right towards the center. And it has sort of galvanized people away from the insiders, and I think we are going to see that result in our elections. We've already saw them throughout 2021, and we're going to see them in this year's election as well.
I think you're right, Selena, that there are four giant blue bubbles in the United States: Silicon Valley, L.A., New York, and the D.C. area, Beltway. Yesterday's Super Bowl, inside the blue bubble of SoFi Stadium, nobody wearing a mask. I love LeBron James being in a crowded box. Nobody wearing a mask. Yep. The only people left wearing masks in America are children who can least afford and are definitely harmed by them. And people who are polite when they go into stores wear masks are still requested. What do you think the message people got seeing LeBron not wearing a mask yesterday?
I think that it was just a complete disregard for anyone that was lesser than them. I mean, you could just smell the distaste that the insiders have for the outsiders. Of course we are able to not wear masks. Of course you have to wear masks. It was the arrogance was just palpable. And what blows my mind is that they still believe that people are going to just follow along like sheep. Again, our cultural curators are so out of touch with the rest of the country, with the country that reads their products, consumes their products, or sits in their seats.
They are. And how do they reconnect it if they wanted to, Selena?
Here's the problem, you. They don't want to.
Midweek, Russia announced it was pulling back from the border with Ukraine. Some saw this as good news. But Russia has a habit of saying one thing and doing another. At this hour, instead of pulling back, it appeared they were continuing to mass troops at the border. I spoke with Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher on Wednesday. We have a war in the offing, a war that will require immediate, expedited response if, as President Biden put it yesterday, one inch of NATO territory is violated. And they're awfully damn close. And you haven't had a briefing? Is that a deficit in your view on the Intel Committee?
Well, I will say we did have a briefing on the Armed Services Committee. We had a broader briefing to the entire conference, as well as Democrats and Republicans. However, there's just limits to what you can get into in that setting versus a smaller setting at a higher level of classification. That being said, what's interesting to me is I think this crisis in particular, in a way similar to the Syrian civil war prior to this, shows how much open source analysis is allowing even those who don't have access to classified information to track Russian troop deployments and movements in near real time. And so I almost don't think you need some sort of secret briefing to understand how serious Vladimir Putin is about invading. I don't really buy this story that came out yesterday that somehow he's pulling back. I don't see any evidence based on Russian troop movements around Ukraine that is credible at all. And unfortunately, this White House has yet again been caught flat-footed. They've been unable or unwilling to act with speed and urgency. They keep hiding behind this idea that deterrence only works if you threaten to impose sanctions after the fact. That betrays a complete naivety and ignorance about basic power relations and basic concepts underpinning deterrence. And so I think we've done almost nothing to convince Putin that he will face very serious costs if he proceeds. Speaking of Mike Turner, as well as Mike Rogers, the ranking member and soon-to-be chair of the Armed Services Committee, they introduced a bill yesterday that I'm on that actually would impose costs right now, sanctioning Putin's cronies and enablers before Russia further invades, reinstating the Nord Stream 2 sanctions so that project doesn't go forward, as well as, in critically, denying exports of semiconductor technology to the Russian Federation by applying something called the Foreign Direct Product Rule. Now, from there, you can hold in reserve a series of other actions in the case that Putin does invade. For example, Macron was actually talking about putting INF non-compliant missiles, intermediate-range missiles, in NATO countries by revising the 1997 NATO-Russia founding pact if Putin invades. That strikes me as a very sensible threat to make to Putin if he invades. There's a lot of things you can do, but we need to start imposing costs now, and we need to ensure the Ukrainians have some combat credibility on the ground. And our entire process of arming Ukraine has been a complete mess, Hugh.
Oh, by the way, it's a bipartisan mess. I want people to understand this. I told people yesterday, because I briefed a couple of people from the Trump years, Mark Esper slow-walked aid for 2.5 years or a year and a half, whatever his tenure was, because he was afraid of the aid getting lost. And there was not just Esper, but civilians in the Pentagon didn't want to send over the javelins. They sat in boxes. They were afraid of the wrong people getting them. Putin has played us through four administrations. In Georgia under W, stopped him. Of course, he snapped up Crimea and part of Ukraine in 2014 under President Obama. Got the aid slow walked through 4 years with Trump. We did get some over there. And then Biden stopped and started again. We are a mess. We do not know how to deal with a gangster.
And Hugh, this really is something we need to dig into on the Armed Services Committee. I'm just afraid the Democrats don't want to do any serious investigation or oversight that might embarrass the Biden administration, but it is a bipartisan failure. And we need to understand if this was a consequence of specific individuals and personalities in the Pentagon or the State Department slow walking assistance, the White House slow walking it, or whether it's just a reflection of how bloated and slow our national security bureaucracy has become. In the same way, I think just the general bureaucracy combined with White House ambivalence and naivety contributed to our fiasco and failure in Afghanistan. But as a great power, as the world's superpower, we need to be able to provide assistance much more quickly than we're doing.
The silent war on democracy.
The tool that they can use to separate one generation from the previous. And this is what Marxists always want to do.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
4 years ago, China expert Stephen Mosher warned us about the rising threat of Chinese totalitarianism. 4 years later, the threat from China has grown exponentially. Yet in spite of China's relentless violations of human rights and dignity, China is being honored as the host of the Winter Olympics. Read the unvarnished truth about China you won't see during the Olympics. Get Stephen Mosher's fully updated book, Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order, available at Amazon and wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The formal end of World War II is now nearly 80 years ago. Even the Cold War itself ended over 30 years ago. Gen Z and millennials, much less my grandchildren, don't remember a world where communism is a real threat to their lives. So the threats that their parents and grandparents battled are not viewed as a danger. And far too often, younger people today have a worldview that could well be described as utopian, or at best, clueless. James Lindsay's book, Race Marxism, digs into how this thinking has infiltrated our education system. He joins Salem host Sebastian Gorka.
For me, at the end of this exercise was simply one objective, the negation of objective truth. Am I reading too much into it?
No, you've pretty much got it. There's one other objective, though. There are two objectives. So queer theory, it's put simply, the word queer means that which is against the normal, that which is outside of and against, positioned against the normal. So it's a war on the normal. Yeah. That's what queer theory is. This is an old idea. And so you are correct. It is a war against what, obviously, objective reality is normal. So it's a war on objective reality. But the second thing that it is it's a tool that they can use to separate one generation from the previous. And this is what Marxists always want to do. This goes back to the first cultural Marxist by the name of George Lukács, who ran the Hungarian Revolution.
Right.
That's right. And what did he do? He became the deputy commissar for education. And what did he implement? Comprehensive sex education. Exactly the stuff we see with the gender theory, the queer theory, these very perverted pornographic books in the school libraries and in school curriculum, teaching children to become sexually active and sexually aware, and they're going to go home, and their parents are going to say no, and they're going to use that rebelliousness of the teenage years, of the youth, and say, you don't understand me. And the parents will say, look at the Bible, and they'll say, the Bible doesn't understand me. And they'll say, well, but our culture, and you say, our culture doesn't understand me. And you can separate a new generation away from its parents, away from its family, away from its religion, and away from its previous culture.
And it's not just normalizing perversion, normalizing the abnormal. Reading your book, I found one of the objectives was just to generate constant confusion in the next generation.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no polar star.
That's right. The goal is, in fact, there's a woman named Hannah Dyer. I think she's a woman. You never know with queer theory. So Hannah Dyer is the name, award-winning scholar in queer theory, wrote a paper about queer theory in early childhood education and early childhood development recently in 2019 or so. And she, in that paper, says the point of queer theory is to prevent a stable LGBTQ identity.
Wow.
It is to prevent stable identity.
Guys.
Why? What did Marcuse? Same thing in the 60s. The working class stabilized. Anything that stabilizes is the enemy, so they have to destabilize the children.
Why are you doing this? I mean, you're a math geek. You're a professor of mathematics. Why are you mapping this insidious, evil 90-year plot to destroy Western civilization? What, quote-unquote, triggered you, James?
What triggered me? So there was a paper that I saw that came out in 2016 about studying glaciers from a feminist perspective. And it said the entire science of glaciology is sexist unless they take up feminist and indigenous glaciology.
This wasn't a parody thing.
This was real. No, it was on $800,000 of National Science Foundation money at the University of Oregon. And so this is real. And so that triggered me, if you will. Sciences are close to my heart. And so, you know, next thing you know, I figure it's time to hoax. My colleagues and I decide it's time to hoax these journals. We wrote some fake academic
papers.
So
there's like three or four of you who, you know, took some passages of Hitler, changed the nouns, and got it published in peer-reviewed journals, right?
Yeah, feminist social work, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Yeah. So we got a bunch of papers accepted by peer-reviewed journals. And so
who are your colleagues? Let's give them some glory now.
Sure. Peter Boghossian is the primary colleague. Helen Pluckrose, who wrote Cynical Theories with me. And then we have a filmmaker who helped as well named Mike Nana. And we perpetrated this on academia. But in the process, this is what really triggered me. I saw with one of the papers, it was about education, and we said that we should abuse these students to overcome their privilege.
So in your hoax article, that's what you said.
Yeah, that's what we argued. And we thought, well, we better say that we'll do it compassionately, which sounded funny.
Abuse compassionately.
Yeah, of course. And they wrote back, the peer reviewers wrote back and said, we love this idea, but don't be compassionate. That recenters
what?
The needs of the privileged. That was their exact word.
Recenters the needs of the privileged?
Yeah, and then they said that we should use what's called the pedagogy of discomfort to make people uncomfortable, which is what AOC said, by the way, when cities were burning in 2020. That protest is supposed to be uncomfortable. Change is supposed to be uncomfortable.
So this reminds me of a good friend whose daughter had just started college here. I think it was at JMU. And the first day of indoctrination in the mandatory lectures, they made everybody stand up and then sit down if you're, you know, white, privileged, blah, blah, blah. And the last question was, if you're a virgin.
Wow.
Just to shame 18-year-old students.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Maoist, James.
That is Maoist. This is exactly Maoist. Anyway, when I saw that, I went to my wife and I said, can I quit my job and expose this full-time? It's the unraveling of Western civilization. And she said, can you make money? And I said, I don't know. And she said, you got 18 months. Let's see what you can do. And we took off. The plane took off. We're doing it.
Coming up.
People forget how bad blacks had it economically under Obama.
Dennis Prager on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Jason Riley is a thoughtful Wall Street Journal columnist. His latest book, The Black Boom, examines the economic success blacks experienced under Donald Trump. Success that is largely unraveled under President Joe Biden's first year. Jason joined Dennis Prager.
Is it fair to say you're not a big Trump fan and still wrote this?
Well, I wasn't a fan of his personality. I wasn't a fan of his Twitter feed. I wasn't a fan of how he often chose to express himself. But I was a fan of his free market economic policies, a fan of his tax cuts, a fan of his deregulation, because I'm a free market conservative who believes that that's the best way to grow an economy and to help everyone living in this country. And I thought, to the extent that he did that, he deserved to be praised. And I was quite shocked and alarmed and disturbed that the media ignored a lot of what was going on in terms of black economic advancement under Trump, because they had painted him as this bigot whose policies were going to hurt low-income minority groups. And if they had reported the facts, that would have undermined their narrative. And so they chose to put aside their professional standards and sort of shape the news to the narrative they wanted to pursue, regardless of the truth. And so I wanted to tell this story because I think it's an underreported story that needs to be told.
So I'm curious, do you think the average black knows this?
Yes, I do. And what I would point to is the way that Trump improved his performance among both blacks and Hispanics in his re-election bid. Even though he lost, he still did better among blacks and Hispanics, particularly men. And I think that's a reflection of an appreciation of how well things were going economically for those groups prior to the pandemic. These are people who, let me back up a little bit. This is really, I mean, the title is The Black Boom, but it's really a working class boom that I'm describing. Blacks and Hispanics just happen to be overrepresented among the working class. So the benefits redounded to them more than to other groups. But it's really a working class boom. That is what these tax cuts and deregulatory efforts did. They grew the economy to the benefit of lower income workers. Wages were rising at faster rates among blacks than among whites, at faster rates among low income Americans than among their bosses and management. And so, yes, I do think you saw an appreciation of this among these racial and ethnic groups, and you continue to see it. There's some news, there's some polls out. I think a CNN poll shows that Biden's support among blacks is below 70%. It's quite shocking for a Democrat. People forget how bad blacks had it economically under Obama. Black unemployment did not fall below double digits, Dennis, until the seventh year of the Obama presidency. So, yes, black folks do understand how much better they were doing economically under Donald Trump prior to the pandemic. There is no doubt in my mind that blacks understand that, because they remember how bad things were going under Obama. He had a personal appeal. Obviously, his election had symbolic value. But in terms of his policies, blacks were not doing well under Obama.
What would Ibram X. Kendi say?
Well, he would say that he wants our political leaders to focus on equity, to focus on wealth redistribution and so forth. And I say, look at the data, look at the track record, because that was President Obama's focus. He thought wealth redistribution, tax hikes, regulating certain sectors of the economy, racial preferences, that's the way to go. Trump did not concern himself with those things. He concerned himself with growing the economy for everyone. And look who benefited the most when he did that. Record low black unemployment, record low poverty rates, black wages rising at faster rates than white wages, Dennis. In fact, during the first 3 years of the Trump presidency, wages for people at the bottom rose at more than double the rate that they did during Obama's second term. So I just say, look at what works best. Free market economic policies work best to close income gaps, to close racial gaps, than do wealth redistribution policies. I think the track record is very plain there.
It just sounds better to the naive, I guess. I have no explanation, because every time it's been tried since the French Revolution, all it has led is to misery.
Yes. So. Yes. Well, as our friend Thomas Sowell likes to say, people who try and redistribute wealth usually end up redistributing poverty.
That's great. Oh, you know what reminds me, because my field of study, sadly it turned out so relevant, was Marxism and leftism. I remember Soviet dissident jokes. They were the best jokes I ever heard. Under capitalism, man exploits man. Under communism, it is the other way around.
I like that.
Isn't that terrific? So Hispanics are clearly awakening, and it's scaring the Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah, they depend heavily on a large portion of that vote to win elections, particularly nationally. And those voters have been abandoning the party. And, that's because their interest is economics primarily. And again, they saw what was happening under these free market policies. You know, Trump cut taxes on corporations. The left said, you're cutting taxes on the rich. But what happened? You know, businesses brought money back from overseas, invested it here, particularly in the manufacturing fields, which again are places where blacks and Hispanics are overrepresented. Jobs were plentiful, wages were rising. That's what people want. And during all through our history, when the economy is growing fastest, strongly, is when it's lifting all boats. I know it sounds trite, but
they have mocked that phrase.
It's true, and I get into this in the book. The fastest period of economic growth for blacks in this country was in the post-war period between the late 40s and the early 70s. So this is during Jim Crow. You know, this is during a time when blacks had very little political representation in this country. And yet, economically, they were doing the best. And the reason is that the economy was doing so well at the time. That's what's most important. If you care about racial inequality, social inequality, economic inequality, grow the economy. People will take advantage of the opportunities that come with a growing economy.
Coming up.
In Canada, you have officially seen a country that was once a representative government to a dictatorship.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's open battle against truckers up north is merely a proxy for his battle against the people and freedoms of Canada. Trudeau's draconian law preventing any unvaccinated trucker from crossing the border led to the standoff. But it's worth noting, many of the truckers who are protesting are indeed vaccinated. And while Trudeau's popularity has been waning, he may have pushed any goodwill he had out the window when he invoked long unused emergency powers so he could, among other things, freeze money intended to help the truckers. Salem host Charlie Kirk begins with a bit of history lesson on Rome.
The Roman Senate decided to basically suspend its operation, and in 31 BC, Caesar Augustus, who was then followed by Tiberius and many others, became Rome's first emperor. And like that, the Republic was dead and the Empire was born. Now, this fascinates historians for a lot of different reasons, because the question that those of us in the West ask is, how could you turn your back on representative government and go towards a dictatorship? How could you go from something that is enlightened to something that is more primal? How could you go from something that is cultured to something that is more tribal? How could you go from something that is more organized to something that is more chaotic or centralized? This is a question that, if you have a good teacher, you wrestle with. And then the conclusion is like, well, thankfully, we have moved past that. Thankfully, in year 2022, we no longer have to go through the kind of arc of going from a republic or a democracy, let's just use representative government as a filler, to a dictatorship. And so, but seldom, almost never, do you get to see a country in real time go from that type of representative government to an empire overnight. We're actually used to the opposite. We're used to the opposite of these fairy tales of Southeastern Asian countries like Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia shedding the dictatorships and going to representative government. We're used to the Arab Spring. We're supposed to believe somehow that Libya is going to be Louisiana just because we got rid of Muammar Gaddafi. The narrative that is usually told in the West is that because of us and our superior values, we help liberate people from dictatorships into democracy or into a representative government. But happening right now on our northern border, the opposite story is unfolding. It is the Roman story. In Canada, you have officially seen a country that was once a representative government to a dictatorship. Justin Trudeau has announced extraordinary war powers for 30 days, including the power to prohibit public assembly, travel, and use of specific property. Justin Trudeau is now officially gone to war with his citizens.
To hear the entirety of Charlie's comments, go to townhallreview.com. Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin, producer Charlie Richard, David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.